The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
And welcome. Happy Friday, October 26, 2012, the last Friday in this month of October of, again, the year 2012. It is Voice America, the leader in internet media planet Gridiron. Thank you very much, all our listeners. Let's preface it. Let's 888-346-9144. If you'd like to call in and join us and share your opinions with us, we are glad to hear from you and to obviously take your call. Joining me, I'm flying solo in-house, is Dave Lockhart, and calling us from the Dirty South, we have Mr. Brian Harper, coach with South Alabama. What's going on, bro?
Hey, man, how's it going?
It's going, my man. So thank you for joining us. I understand you were a little under weather last week, and glad to know that you're back on your feet and, again, that you can join us.
Man, all I can tell anybody out there, thank God for Theraflu and juice and all that stuff, man, because once that gets hold to you, it is stop the show, period.
You know what? I had a battle with the flu and was introduced to Theraflu, and I agree with you. Over-the-counter drug, that's one of the best ones you can get. It's bitter and nasty, but when you throw some juice in it, everything's all good. No doubt on that. Hey, B, we got a lot going on in the world of sports, but a lot, frankly, in the world of college football. Another exciting week with a number of teams that have a lot at stake. And, you know, I guess we're going to bounce this around. But speaking briefly, you and I were talking before going on the air about the unfortunate arrest of Tyrann Mathieu, better known as the Honey Badger, along with a former teammate, Jordan Jefferson, in Louisiana. It appears to be that there may be allegations of drug distribution and not only just personal possession with respect to marijuana.
You know, it's sad the fact that the way it was done, and it seems that it was more than just them, a couple of guys came together smoking weed. It's like these guys made a hit on getting past the checkpoint and getting to in the apartment. This goes a little bit deeper than, I was just getting around, getting private college kids smoking weed. This goes a little bit deeper. And unfortunately, I'm afraid to say this, that if they look deeper, there might be even, more things that they're going to uncover.
And you know what? I think they are going to look deeper, because I agree, from all accounts, this is not a situation where you have, some young men who are, you know, recreationally just getting together from time to time to smoke marijuana. Now, you know, people might have different or varying views on, you know, possession and the smoking of marijuana or just possession for personal use. You know, frankly, you know, I am an attorney. I am not bent out of shape or upset about young men, frankly, that smoke marijuana. I'm just not recreationally. Whatever you do, as long as you're not necessarily harming anyone, and if you can still be productive, so be it. You know, personally, I have never tried the stuff. Heard is great. Heard it makes you feel great.
You're not in the same boat.
Yeah.
And the one time that I did have the peer pressure of trying it was a freshman in college, and the guy that was smoking it made a mistake and gave a rookie what they call the roach. And me, being a rookie, I couldn't handle it. I felt the heat from the thing, so I threw it in the middle of the floorboard and started stepping on it. So I flunked the test of being able to even the peer pressure, man, so I never got back at it.
Yeah, I got you, man. My pop, man, was all the, he kind of quenched that peer pressure thing. It just wasn't for me. Okay, you know, everybody can make their own personal choices. We're just talking about specifically marijuana here. You know, I'm not going to get into the whole realm of the meth and all other illicit drugs, but marijuana, you know, most times when my observations of buddies who smoke that, you know, they don't tend to be in my opinion, you know, involved in the gateway situation where we're using that and then we're trying to get higher. Most of my buddies would smoke that stuff and then eat up everything in the refrigerator. So, you know, and they would be real mellow and relaxed. That's about the extent of it. But again, going back to Tyrann Mathieu, Jordan Jefferson, and a few other ex-LSU football players, this seems to be much, much more on a grander scale. This is beyond just recreational and personal use. And I agree with you, Brian. If you look a little bit deeper, we're going to find that it looks like they were in the business of distribution and sale of. So, right. You know, we got to sit back and let, like they said, the process run its course. And if there's punishment to be handed out, I believe it will be meted out swiftly. And unfortunately, I think Tyrann Mathieu has thrown away an opportunity to revive his career and perhaps play at the next level, that being the NFL.
Man, just when he's about to get root for the kid for getting back in school and hanging in there, and could have been a great feel-good story for the year, when he goes away and throws away he throws away, and it's not a, you know, when you play, you hope to put his hand to get to the NFL, and of course, you know, and it's good to have financial security, but, I mean, to me, this guy's just greedy. He's in his world where you feel like he's untouchable. Someone's fed him that his talent is so great that somebody will take a chance. But I really think with this arrest, no one's going to touch his head.
You may be very well right. I still have some sliver of, I guess, hope, if we want to characterize it as that, that someone, be it on the NAIA level, FBS level, or perhaps even Division II, Division III, because of the kid's talent, would be willing to take a look with an appropriate support system around him. But, you know, you said off the air, this is not just like this guy was a lockdown corner. He certainly is an impact player. We would love to have him, anyone would love to have him on the team, aside from these problems he's having off of the field. But when you combine these problems he does have, you know, you just make a business decision. You may be very well right that he doesn't get the opportunity anymore because he squandered an opportunity. And frankly, it appears he just doesn't have the tools to make the right decisions. And but at some point, we all are personally responsible for our own actions, and that means we're going to be personally responsible for the consequences.
Yeah.
So let's move on from that because we got a lot of big games going on.
We got a lot. Too many going on. You know, you got, and if Jay was there, you know, you got Notre Dame, Oklahoma, got Alabama, you got Arizona, and USC. It's a lot, man. You hate to dump on kids. You hate to dump on kids, but there's just so much on it. Let it be said, you thought Jordan Jefferson should have deserved a shot in the Canadian League, but here he is. I mean, you're back at college, man. I understand you want to finish your degree, but here you are. Instead of just going to get your degree,
you're
out there getting ready to ship your drugs.
Right, you know, and let's not have this somber moment for the length of the show. So let's kind of move on. Let's talk about some games that we know are going to have some impact on, finally, on the BCS system and throughout the country of college football. And let's start with, hey, the primetime game is going to be Notre Dame, Oklahoma. I know personally I'm looking forward to seeing that game. You know, my thoughts on Notre Dame is that they have played well, okay? There's no question. They are now, 7-0. Their schedule at the beginning of the year, looking at it, was more impressive than it's actually played out. And what I mean by that, they've had a number of teams that they played in the Big Ten, and you know how I feel, Brian, about the Big Ten. They're just not very good, very strong. Notre Dame has played a lot of close games, but they've won those close games. But I think the luck of the Irish is going to run out in this weekend, because I just don't believe that their offense will allow them to win the game in Norman, Oklahoma. What's your thoughts with respect to that, Brian?
My thoughts are, when I am going to get a Big Ten, a little bit more respect than a lot of people are giving it for, because we're just at an age, man, that no one predicted the SEC would get so dominant. That being said, we take for granted you being from SEC country,
yep,
and me being down in SEC country. There's still some good football players in the Big Ten. Looking at guys like Denard Robson. That being said, I think where I'm really getting stressed out at do not put this guy Manateo in the Heisman talk.
Okay.
You cannot compare this guy. Great linebacker,
mm-hmm.
but you cannot compare this guy to the things that Charles Woodson did.
Right.
When he came out. It's not even close.
Right.
You're a linebacker. You're supposed to make tackles.
Mm-hmm.
And so, are you making a lot of them? Yes. But that being said, we haven't seen anybody really high powered offense he hasn't played. Now we're really going to find out where rubber meets the road this weekend.
Yes.
If the Big 12 is all what they cracked it to be, because everybody's talking about the Big 12's record against everybody else. So the Big 12 has a chance to, Oklahoma has a chance to put something on the map for them. But that being said, my only skepticism about Oklahoma is that you let one guy beat you. I mean, a great kid now, Optimus Klein, is that deal.
Okay. Optimus Klein.
Yeah. You still let one player beat you.
Yeah.
So I would say hands down, go with Oklahoma, mm-hmm. I just can't. But, man, it's definitely going to be a strong matchup. But right now, if you're Notre Dame and the Big Ten, being around the Big Ten conference and stuff, here's your shot to say, hello world, look at us.
Right. You're going to see strength versus strength. Obviously, Notre Dame has won the games that they've won because of a great defense, and they can run the football. And they have a developing quarterback in Golston who's making plays. He's a turnover machine right now, but he's at least learning and playing the position. But I don't think that the competition that they have faced thus far is on a par of what they're going to see, at least offensively and even athletically, as they're going to see with respect to Oklahoma. Because, I, Brian, I believe you would agree with me. The back end of that Notre Dame defense isn't that great. The fact of the matter is the front seven controls the game, controls the defense, and they haven't faced really a quarterback that's dynamic as a Landry Jones has at least the capability of being on a Saturday evening. And I think if they, being Oklahoma, play like Oklahoma has played for the last 4 to 5 games, this game really could end up very lopsided.
It could be. Another thing, I don't like the fact that not everyone names successful, and you know, you and I always try to keep the real here on the show.
Yeah.
Now there's quarterback controversy coming out of the whip. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't think you should lose your position off of injury, but now as you're starting trying to get there, now you're gonna kind of make that quarterback change at this point or make it a controversy. That part disgusts me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I think Brian Kelly, though, is smart enough to go with what brought you there. Like, us from the outside looking in, you might have a number of people. I'm not one of them. I'm going to put this on the record. I've never been impressed with Tommy Rees. Okay. He is a caretaker, okay quarterback. All right. And he had been better than what they had at quarterback. I didn't think much of Dane Chris when he was there. And frankly, didn't think that much of Jimmy Clausen when he was there.
He played against in California, and I'm like, oh my God, he is hoodwinked and bamboozled a whole lot of people. But
right, because it was the level of competition he was playing against.
Yeah,
and he played at this school where they were stacked with nothing but Division I A players around him. Mark Tyler played at that school. The wide receiver went to a college on a D1 scholarship. They had a number of people that went to the universities on college scholarships with respect to playing on that defense, and that system coddled him. They were playing inferior competition, and there you have it. I was never impressed with him as a freshman or anything that he had done at Notre Dame.
I just don't like that. It's amazing that sometimes you get all this success and national recognition, but then you can't allow, unfortunately sometimes, certain quarterbacks to be the face of your program. And I don't even know where it's coming from, the kid that got you there, that you would even remotely have a quarterback competition. And if this kid would outplay, I understand that, but I just don't understand why do people even worry about that stuff.
Well, and I think that's more talk outside of the program, because I think Brian Kelly has a better grip and firm hold on what he has at the quarterback position. And it's already announced. I'm looking at the page, and it was announced last night. Evan Golston is the one who will be starting against the Sooners. And but for the fact that he, being Kelly, knew that they could beat BYU without him playing, in my opinion, that's why he didn't play after having suffered a concussion.
Yeah.
Did you have a chance to watch the game at all at Clemson versus Wake Forest last night?
Yes, I did. I was swapping back between Clemson and, of course, Clemson and Wake Forest come being Minnesota.
Right.
And man, Clemson is a team that just makes me so angry.
They do. They are frustrating, aren't they?
Yes, they make me so angry. You look at them on some of their Thursday night games with certain teams. You're like, man, there's no way nobody should be able to play with this team. And then other nights, you wonder how they come at Florida State just come back and destroy them.
Right. And even though they won the game, let's say, last week against Vatek, did you realize how poorly they performed on offense? I looked at statistically how they performed. And, man, it was like 130 yards rushing and maybe 250 yards passing. That dynamic of an offense and a team. And that was the statistics. And they always leave you scratching your head, just as you're saying, because you're like, okay, how can you be that physically superior and talented yet have this uneven performances in big games? I don't get it either.
I'm going to go ahead and I know everybody loves them. And if we were anywhere in South Carolina, we'd probably get a crush for them. I'm going to say I put that on coaching.
Yeah.
And that's not to say he's a bad coach. I'm saying that from a coaching focal point, he's inconsistent.
You there, B?
I said, okay.
Okay, go.
That's not to say that he's a bad coach. I'm just saying from a coach's focal point, he's inconsistent.
Oh, yeah, Dabo Sweeney, you just never know what you're going to consistently get with his team. And that's I guess conversely, you always know when you compare, let's say, for instance, in Alabama, what you always going to get from them. They always going to bring it. It doesn't matter who they play. And even when they're not playing, let's say, firing at all cylinders, in an eight-cylinder, they're firing on seven of them. And you can't say that always with respect to Clemson. But, hey, folks, we got to go into that first break. Please stay with us. Brian Harper, kind enough to join us. Hit us up here at 888-346-9144. Voice America, Planet Gridiron.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Hey, son, why so down?
Well, gee golly, Dad, Coach doesn't let me play. I'm always on the sidelines, and I can't seem to make any friends. I don't know what to do anymore.
Well, here, son, why don't you try some of these PlanetGridiron.com pills? It says right here on the label, they'll get you bigger, faster, and stronger. They'll even get you friends.
Wow, thanks, Pop. You're swell.
Wow, Dad, this stuff really works.
I'm starting bigger, faster, and stronger,
and everybody loves me.
PlanetGridiron.com is not a pill and cannot make you bigger, faster, or stronger. It is a website dedicated to players, coaches, and fans engineered to get you better on the field and beyond. PlanetGridiron.com.
Where football lives.
We some hard hitters.
Hard-hitting radio is a new kind of sports and entertainment show. Your hosts are NFL veterans Mark McMillan and co-host Byron Evans. It's an hour of hater-free radio every week. You'll hear interviews with top athletes, celebrities, coaches, and fans. It's humor, hits, and conversation. Hard-hitting radio is on with McMillan and Evans. Listen Fridays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Network.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
Thank you. We're back. We're our second segment of Voice America Sports, the leader in internet media, Planet Gridiron. Hey, it's your host, Dave Lockhart, again welcoming you in and thanking you for joining us this Friday. Just hit us up, 888-346-9144. On the line from the South, we do have our always contributing Mr. Brian Harper. B, we were talking about college football, and I want to pick up still on college football. Off the air, we were talking about a little bit about Ohio State, Big Ten. I'm going to give some love to some of their players. one being Mr. Braxton Miller, starting quarterback at Ohio State, and B, we were talking about how well the young man has performed, and although he's been nicked up, it appears that Ohio State has a Tommy Reese in the version of Kenny Guyton, who is the backup quarterback who tends to be able to step in and perform. And Brian, why don't you share with our listeners what you were saying from a perspective of a coach when a backup comes in as opposed to a starter, which you have a lot of film and you know about?
Well, a lot of people sometimes, when you sit there as the opposing fans who should come in, you kind of start rooting saying, yeah, it's the backup. But sometimes when you look at that, especially when you start talking about a system with Urban Meyer, when he first was at Utah and of course brought that system in with the spread, and then when he came to the SEC, he had to tweak it a little bit because athletes were too fast. He didn't block the backside in. And in the SEC, you got to be able to understand the backside end to be blocked. It's not here to run the play down.
Right.
And now he's back in the Big Ten, and he's running that same system. Well, athletes are good, but they're not as fast. And so, unfortunately, when you, as an opposing coach, when you come in and the guy's already been running the system, you don't know exactly what his strengths are. You're still running a read option, and then you don't know if this kid, you know, if this kid can throw, go going to the right. Can he bounce back and come back left?
Right.
Those are the things when he comes into the game, you don't know. And unfortunately, if the game is close, all he needed is that one play,
mm-hmm.
to get the linebacker out of position and find an open man because he can throw back left. And you ended up moving the chains because you didn't get the kid go back left, and you're trying to force the kid to do one thing because you're trying to run your defensive game plan off of what Braxton Miller can do.
Okay.
And here it is. You got more of a pocket, more patient kid. And at that time, what was your defense off
the
rhythm?
Okay, and I was going to ask you. You're hitting the nail on the head. I guess the answer to the question in advance is that this, look, when you don't have this book on this new quarterback that's coming in or this new player, do you tend to simplify your scheme perhaps on defense or conversely on offense when you're trying to adjust to this player to try to see what can he or she do, and what can we do to defense, what the strength is of this individual?
Man, unfortunately, all D coordinators, most of them fall into this trap, the generational curse trap, right? New quarterback, let's bring pressure.
Right.
And you bring pressure, and you got your D linemen that are used to hitting a certain gap, if they've gotten comfortable beating a certain guy, or you bring your pressure from here. And lo and behold, the backup quarterback, even though he might not feet as fast as the starter, sometimes he hangs in there a little bit longer. So hanging in there a little bit longer gives a guy a little bit longer to get open because you are bringing pressure and that's going to leave somebody open. So unfortunately, man, when you win these schemes and stuff, and a lot of decoding to do because he's a new guy and stuff, and 70% of the time it'll work. But then you got that rare 30% that, man, that guy is feast or famine.
Mm-hmm.
And if that quarterback happens to be a pretty decent kid and finds an open man, you end up getting beat.
Gotcha. Well, you know, again, bunch of good football going on. We got Oregon who keeps getting hit in the BCS. They keep winning and blowing out people. But they can't seem to get a break, man. They dropped again in the BCS.
Man, I'll just play somebody close. I've never seen this happen in my life.
Yeah, that's one of the first times where you see a team that's, you know, firing, doing what they're supposed to do. It's a rarity to see them continue to drop. I guess the computers, at least at this point, don't necessarily like them. And because, margin of a victory is not considered by the computers, they are not receiving the benefit of really how well they're playing.
You know what? I would love to see this because I'm really not understanding it. I like Florida, but
yeah.
if you asked to ask me today, who would I choose over Oregon and Florida, I'd pick Oregon.
Yeah.
If you asked me who would I choose over Oregon or Notre Dame, I'd pick Oregon. I just don't see a team that can strike so fast and put 21 points up in the first quarter. And if you're playing college team, regardless of the conference, what I give Oregon credit at is that you know the Pac-12 is a weak conference, but they're beating them like they're a weak conference.
Exactly.
You know, you're not in the game.
Hey, hold on one second, B-Hop. Excuse me. Hey, I understand we got Jay Graves on the line. Jay, what's happening, man?
Fellas, what's going on with you?
Oh, man, glad to hear your voice. Happy Friday to you, and thank you for joining Bro Brian and myself.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. B-Hot, what up, baby?
Man, what's up, man? We were just giving you Sooner some props, man, a little while ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we both believe they about to peel some wigs back to that white meat is showing.
Hey, I wish you could stand on top of Lucas Oil Stadium and say that. All these folks up here think Notre Dame going to go down there and do something. I'm like, dude, you got to have athletes to play big games like this. And Notre Dame just doesn't have the athletes.
They don't have enough of them. They have some.
They got a couple of them.
Yeah.
You got to have some depth. And you're showing up in a stadium. Like I told a boy this earlier today. If it was a BCS game, I'd pick against OU. but since they playing at the crib, and it's 79-4 at home under Bob Stoops, it's going to be very difficult for you to come in there and win.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that's what me and B-Hop have been talking about. I just don't think that that offense can do enough. It has no identity. They don't know what they really are trying to do. And it's always moving. It's always changing and based upon the opponent that they're playing. And usually by this time, and Brian, I think you would agree, is, hey, your system is in. We do what we do. We tweak our system, but we don't wholesale change it based upon the opponents that we play. Brian, I mean, is that what you do? What South Alabama does, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, you know, our system is with our new offensive coordinator. Our new offensive coordinator came in this year. We'll make a long story short, we're just not finding our stride by the fourth or fifth game.
Okay.
But that being said, I'm looking at the fact you want to talk about it. We're going to find out what Manateo is all about when they spread him out.
Yeah.
Any cover. If you're a Heisman Trophy candidate for a defensive player, we're going to find out because you're not going to play Wisconsin who don't do nothing but come downhill.
Right.
You're not going to play Bernard Robinson out of Michigan who pretty much was a so-so passer. You're not going to play those guys. The Big 12 is going to spread you out. They're going to do a whole lot of things.
Hey, go ahead, Jay.
I was talking to a lot of Notre Dame fans this morning, and what they fail to realize is, like we said, in the Big 12, especially with Oklahoma, they spread you out and they run a hurry-up offense. They probably going to run 75 to 85 plays. And is Notre Dame in shape enough to run, to stay on the field as long as they're going to have to stay on the field back-to-back-to-back plays?
Mm-hmm.
And they're running plays within 14, 15 seconds.
Right.
You know, can that Notre Dame defense stay on the field? Now, they're good defense, but are they accustomed to playing at that pace? And when you're up here playing Big Ten teams, Purdue, Michigan State, you know, those teams don't spread it out. They don't play at the same pace, and they don't have the athletes.
Right. They basically are playing teams that run downhill. You know, for instance, Michigan State, we're going to hand the ball to Le'Veon Bell. Okay.
Right.
Purdue, I'm still trying to figure out what Purdue does because, it's so many changes that they undergo. We know that BYU is stagnant. They cannot throw the football, so they're primarily reliant upon the run. Well, that's one thing Notre Dame can do. They can stop your run, or they can play with the run. So they'll always be on the, in a game when you're matching up a team that's run dominant. Stanford, breaking in a new quarterback. I am not impressed with Josh Nunez, and I'm not even comparing him to Andrew Luck because nobody compares to him, okay? I just, frankly, his body of work, what I've seen, he is a caretaker. I don't like caretaker quarterbacks because when you need them to make a play, they don't make the play. And see, that's why, jumping around a little bit, A.J. McCarron, I'm beginning to like more because I think he's metamorphosing, if you will, moving from the caretaker to now you can actually have him win you a game now.
Yeah, I'm impressed. I'm he's starting to throw balls that I didn't think he could throw.
Right.
Once I saw the Ole Miss game, even though it was Ole Miss, and I know everybody's like, well, that's Ole Miss. He was just putting balls. He was putting balls from way to way. I don't care how good the corner was. That ball would have been completed on a lot of people. So that's when I kind of knew that Alabama really had kind of arrived and may have a chance at repeating.
Yeah, they have a serious chance at repeating because that defense, everybody's saying this, and, you know, I've seen Alabama, but again, it's from afar. They're saying they don't have a first round enriched, if you will, squad. But it doesn't seem to matter because everybody seems to, one, know how to play. They know how to play in that system, and they're good enough athletes to get the job done. And on offense, I think they're making the jump under the new coordinator, whose name escapes me. Who is that down there now, Brian? Because the old one, McElvain, went to Colorado State.
McElvain went to Colorado State. Our offensive coordinator now?
Yes. Who is offensive coordinator at Alabama?
It's weird because McElvain went to Colorado State, and we got the offensive coordinator from Colorado. So I can't quite call it. The guy that was at Colorado came here.
Okay.
And McElwain went to Colorado State. And it's weird because Nick Saban and my friend that's up there on the coaching staff, his son, he says what Nick Saban has done is taking the West Coast formations and gave them the physicality of the SEC. And that's all he's done.
Well, he's done a great job at that. Gentlemen, I need you to stay on the line because we do need to go to that second break. Mr. Engineer Matt, take us out and bring us back soon.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Hey, son, why so down?
Well, gee golly, Dad, Coach doesn't let me play. I'm always on the sidelines, and I can't seem to make any friends. I don't know what to do anymore.
Well, here, son, why don't you try some of these PlanetGridiron.com pills? It says right here on the label, they'll get you bigger, faster, and stronger. They'll even get you friends.
Wow, thanks, Pop. You're swell.
Wow, Dad. This stuff really works.
I'm starting bigger, faster, and stronger,
and everybody loves me.
PlanetGridiron.com is not a pill and cannot make you bigger, faster, or stronger. It is a website dedicated to players, coaches, and fans engineered to get you better on the field and beyond. PlanetGridiron.com.
Where football lives.
What if there was a program that brought the best in sports and the best of entertainment together in one place? It can be done. And Darnell Autry proves it every week on Outside the Spotlight. In this program, athletes and artists come together to share their success stories, hobbies, professional projects, and more that will interest not only the sports fan, but fans of entertainment and other human interest stories. If you have something you want to ask your favorite athlete or entertainer, listen for Outside the Spotlight, Fridays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, on Voice America Sports.
Internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
And we're back with that third segment, Voice America, the leader in internet media, Planet Gridiron. Joining us is Jay Graves from the Midwest, and we always had Brian Harper, and I'm your host, Dave Lockhart. Hit us up at 888-346-9144. I know it's the World Series going on, folks, but if you're calling to talk about that, this ain't the show for you. We all about that football, that oblong ball. So shout out to San Francisco. Keep getting it done. Frankly, folks, I'm biased. I ain't interested. So back to the football game, gentlemen. We were talking about Alabama and bouncing around a little bit, and we know they have a big game. They have a prime time, if you will, ESPN with Mississippi State, who frankly, folks, have done an excellent job. Their coach was the former, I believe, offensive coordinator under Urban Meyer, Dan Mullen, before he took over as the head coach at in Starkville. Done a wonderful job. I think he's revived the program. They can run the rock. They play good defense. They have a cornerback, two lockdown corners, and on the back end, number 13, his name escapes me, I believe, leads the nation in interception with about 7 interceptions already. So it's going to be interesting. I'm going to kick this over to Brian and have him give us kind of his synopsis or a preview of that game and in light of the fact that Alabama is so dear to his heart. Go ahead, talk to us, B, about this game.
I got so many mixed feelings about that because I have some mixed feelings about this game only because Les Corney used to be the offensive coordinator at South Alabama. He's the offensive coordinator up there.
Okay.
But also, it's a site. Everybody's all about Mississippi State and Dan Mullen. Well, I'm great to look at that side. But do you realize that 15 of their starters are Sylvester Croom recruits?
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So before I jump on the Mississippi State bandwagon and or give them credit, I'm going to wait and see him because his guys do.
Okay.
So right now, those guys that are pretending to start right now, Sylvester Croom recruits, he had an eye what those guys are going to be in 4 years.
Okay.
They forced them out. So I'll wait and see after next year. Now, if they go out there and get beat down by Alabama, which, you know, which they probably will, I still want to see how well they'll perform after this game. But I just got mixed emotion because I know what Sylvester Croom had to go through.
Right.
All this to go through and bring them out of the doldrums. And now everybody's acting like this guy is the next coming. And I just want to see what he's going to do. That's all I want to see.
Okay, and fair enough. And, you know, to all our listeners out there, you might want to check out the SEC story on Sylvester Croom. I had a chance to tape it, DVR it, and watched it, and very moved, very impressed with Sylvester Croom. And I embrace definitely what you're saying about what Sylvester Croom and the imprint he left on the Mississippi State program before he was unceremoniously told essentially to leave.
Yeah. And, you know, what's so bad about it? You got programmed like a Mississippi State that is never going to be a winner per se.
Uh-huh.
So you got to give guys time to at least U-turn the program.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? To some degree. And when you go in and you expect for a guy in 3 or 4 years to turn a perennial loser to a large degree into a winner, it's just not going to happen.
It's not. All right. And you also need to look at and appreciate what Croom inherited. They had lost scholarships. They had sanctions. You know, it wasn't as though, and Starkville, let's be honest, come on. Ain't nobody knocking down the door to go to no damn Starkville, Mississippi to play ball. Okay. And you have to, in those types of programs, I mean, University of Arizona, my alma mater, same way. I think you would agree, Jay York, Purdue. When you hire a new coach and you sign them to a 4-year deal, you gotta give him the full 4 years. You have to, in order to turn the program around, because you have to bring in one. Let him instill or implement his system on and off the field. Let him go in. You have to do that.
And you know what? Everybody is screaming and hollering about the new coach and them being 7-0, et cetera. Let's be honest. When you look at the schedule, you know, they played one or two legitimate ball games, and so now you got to say, okay, now you're starting to get into the meat of the schedule. Even if they lose to Alabama, how well will they play against Alabama? And that's what everybody wants to see, because I don't think anybody in their right mind expects Mississippi State to beat Alabama.
Right.
Because the only person going to beat Alabama is Alabama.
Right. Alabama plays like Alabama, they win. B-Hop, you were about to say something?
I was saying, when Sylvester Croom took that job, and a coach, you'll be very familiar with Tommy Tuberville, because he knows what it takes to turn around programs. Tommy Tuberville said, when everybody tried to criticize Sylvester Croom, he says, for what Sylvester Croom did, Mississippi State should have been willing to give him 10 years to turn around.
Exactly. Right.
People got mad at Tommy Tuberville for sticking up for Sylvester Croom. And that's another thing, that's why Tommy Tuberville wasn't an SEC favorite guy.
Right.
But once he coached it off, and I'll give Tuberville credit, he was never intimidated by Nick Saban. He spoke his mind, and he didn't care about this SEC thing. So, and he's the only Auburn coach in a long time that had us 6 in a row. So, he suffered a lot.
Right.
Because the Cougars eventually forced him out of Auburn.
And done a wonderful job at Texas Tech. Wonderful.
Really?
So, yeah. That brother, he knows how to coach, okay? Because I remember him, I know you all do, when he was at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
You know, and he was able to win at Ole Miss, you know, in terms of, you know, let's define one.
He had Joe Gunn. He had all kinds of talent at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
And the reason he gets to Ole Miss, he's like, look, you guys know how to take down these flags.
Yep.
I can get these two that I can only get in here. Y'all take it down.
No, I agree. I agree totally. I remember reading that exact same article and remember his interview. He said, look, this, and when you show the Confederate flag and the old rebel running around, what does that bring up in your mind? You know, he said, it is time to lay this thing to rest because it definitely is an impediment to being able to recruit. And it's just time. It's time. And you know what? Fell upon deaf ears. So he left and look at what he did at Auburn. And, you know, they ran him out of there. Look at what he did at Texas Tech. But the fact of the matter, going back to what we were initially saying, you know, for instance, out here out west, folks, get ready to start laughing. Colorado. Jim Embry deserves 12 years to turn around that program. Have you seen? have you guys seen? I mean, they look like a junior college.
I mean, it's terrible to the level that they've fallen to in a matter of 4 or 5 years.
Exactly.
It's just unbelievable.
And you know, I look at my frat brother. I'm gonna give a shout out to him, Eric Bieniemy. I met him, you know, in passing. You know, he's the offensive coordinator. And you know, have you? I mean, physically, I was watching the game, folks. I mean, I watched ASU play Colorado. What was it? Thursday night, two or three Thursday nights ago. Okay, and I was just watching them on TV, man. And physically, the players that they had on the Colorado roster. And I remember it was an injury timeout. They had to cart off one of Colorado's defensive players. And physically, I was looking at them, and I was like, man, this looks like a high school squad. I mean, it was no. The athletes that they have there, I would venture to say, man, I don't know if they were even 1 or 2 star recruits because they lost so much. I mean, really, they lost so much, man. They are just not in a situation where they can compete or be competitive in the Pac-12, let alone the Mountain West Conference. I don't think that they would do well.
And hey, it looked like they went out on the yard at the intramural game.
It did.
They did.
I mean, Brian, have you actually seen any of their games?
Well, I actually saw a little bit and stuff last week.
USC, yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I was looking at them, man. We could like looking at our guys, man. You know what? They've been trying to came out here. Come on, down here.
All right. I mean, it's not, and it's not a knock, Brian, on the South Alabama program at all. But I mean,
we're 4 years old. We're 4 years old, and they're
right
900. So yeah, of course.
Right.
Right. I think that South Alabama match up against Colorado would get in it, if you know what I mean.
Right.
You know, so it's just these programs, they take time. People need to be patient. Again, I'm very curious to how Mississippi State performs because I like UJ. I don't think they beat Alabama. I don't think they're good enough to beat Alabama. I've seen them play a couple of times this year. They're decent at the quarterback. Tyler Russell has made a marked improvement. He's better than Rife ever was, in my opinion, and he definitely has improved from the end of last year to now. He's playing well. They have a stabilizing running back, but let's be honest, you ain't running against Alabama. You ain't doing that for four quarters.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And I don't think he's good enough in the passing game, or Mississippi State is good enough in the passing game to offset the problems they're going to run into trying to run the ball against Alabama for four quarters.
Right. And like I said, my friends up there, Chris Samuels and Kevin Sigler, man, they said, Hart, man. Everybody talks like, man, we ain't really doing nothing fancy. Yeah, we just took our West Coast attitude, West Coast foundation, and Coach Saban makes it physical SEC play. And he said, now don't get me wrong now, there is, if you coach at Alabama, there is no life during football season. As a matter of fact, sometimes they have to hide in the bathroom. And that's a true story. I thought they was actually just hiding out. They heard the door and they thought it was Coach Saban, man. They jumped up. When you come in here. So, but you know, the benefits of winning, you know, and then the coaching side, you take that chance because if you get a chance to come from that coaching tree, you get a chance to get a great job. So, and that's what makes Kirby Smart one of the hottest names out there. But I think, you know, Kirby Smart is a smart guy to know that his brand is better than Alabama. There's no fit for him leaving.
You know what? I wouldn't leave. He's in too good of a situation financially. He's one of the highest paid, if not the highest paid coordinator in the nation. He is with a winning program. It's clear to me that Saban allows a lot of free reign for him to run and implement his defense. It is a hotbed, as we know, playing in the SEC, Alabama. They are a rich tradition in history in which they will not have any impediments to recruiting. Why would one – see, I've heard this before, and I totally agree. Perhaps you all do. If you already are happy, why are you trying to be happier? you know?
And like Big Mama said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. B, your thoughts?
Well, somebody take out of my man from Boise State's book.
Chris Peterson.
Man, he was all over, but he's like, man, I'm here. So
you know who else seems to have bought into that and is doing extremely well and quietly just whooping tail? Oregon State's Mike Riley. Done an excellent job up there. You know, took a team that was, what, maybe 2-3 win team last year and now competing for getting some BCS love, undefeated. And first of all, if you all know anything about Mike Riley, I'm going to say this and then we're going to have to go to break. Man can coach. Came over from San Diego and it was not Kiffin who SC wanted. It was Mike Riley. Hey, folks, stay with us. We got to pay some more bills. Come on back. Hit us up. Voice America Sport, Internet Leader. 888-346-9144.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Hey, son, why so down?
Well, gee golly, Dad, Coach doesn't let me play. I'm always on the sidelines, and I can't seem to make any friends. I don't know what to do anymore.
Well, here, son, why don't you try some of these PlanetGridiron.com pills? It says right here on the label, they'll get you bigger, faster, and stronger. They'll even get you friends.
Wow, thanks, Pop. You're swell.
Wow, Dad, this stuff really works.
Aye,
I'm starting bigger, faster, and stronger, and everybody loves me.
PlanetGridiron.com is not a pill and cannot make you bigger, faster, or stronger. It is a website dedicated to players, coaches, and fans engineered to get you better on the field and beyond. PlanetGridiron.com.
Where football lives.
Brought to you by Zeiss. This week on The Revolution with Jim and Trav. Oh boy, do we have a show for you.
Tom Grunewald with High Tech Fishing and Chad Hepler with Otter Outdoors.
Hey, we'll also hear from Chris Brown. Oh no, look out, Rihanna! And he is with Ice Castle Fishing Houses and Nick Chido with Ice Armor.
When we talk about tips, tactics, and gear, when we look at ice fishing.
And it's brought to you by Ram at RamTrucks.com.
Wednesdays at 1 Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. I'm Jim Ferguson. I'll see you on the trail.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
And welcome, we're back. Planet Gridiron, Voice America, the leader in internet media. Again, happy Friday to you. Dave Lockhart joining you here in-house in the lovely Arizona. Folks, the weather is beautiful. Had to brag and had to get a shout-out to you. B-Hop joining us from the Dirty South, and we always have Jay Graves giving us that Midwest flavor and that swang. Hey, folks, before we get back into the football, we all here on the line have partaken and viewed many of the 30-30 documentaries. I want to kick this over to Jay Graves because it was a great piece that they put together on ESPN regarding the untimely death of Benji Wilson, who was the top-rated basketball player out of Chicago, Illinois, back in, I believe it was 85. And with that, Jay, take it away, please.
Yeah, well, actually, it was November 84. It was actually okay. My senior year in high school. I grew up in Gary, Indiana, which is just 10 minutes off the south side of Chicago. And just seeing that documentary the other night, we just brought back so many memories, man. It was unbelievable. This kid was the best basketball player in the country. He was, just imagine LeBron James, Kevin Garnett, the guys, you know, that you hear about as the phenom coming out of high school.
Right.
The Anthony Davises, et cetera. He was that guy before we started even hearing about all these other guys being the phenom.
Right.
And for him to just go out there and be killed, you know, right across the street from the school, it was just unbelievable. It shook the entire Chicagoland area because at that time, in 84, there were a whole lot of gang banging, a whole lot of gangs and gang violence, but nobody was getting shot.
Mm-hmm.
Gangs were fighting at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a kid to get murdered was just, it just blew every, it was mind blowing.
Hey, B, you were saying something, sir? Brian?
No, I was saying everybody back then was more so going ahead. It was rare at that time, around 84, even though myself, was only in 10th grade, you didn't hear about tactical not a gun and a shot, man. You got your butt whooped, and man, you had to keep it moving. You got the
right
one, got pistol on, and that was it. So,
yeah, same here, and the same where I grew up too. You know, 84, I was in just going to ninth grade. I was in ninth grade when this happened. And, and Jay, you were saying how it impacted Chicago, but it reverberated actually throughout the country. Because, you know, this is, I think, when we slowly started moving, at least the media-wise, with attention in sports moving into the high school realm, and you're beginning to see publicity and the promotion and notoriety being bestowed upon these high school phenoms. And Benji Wilson was one of the first to rise within that, you know, that media kind of groundswell.
We were probably the first.
Yeah.
Was like the whole high school phenom talking about the league and things like that. And, you know, I'm not even sure at the time players were even allowed to even go straight to court. They were still going to college and stuff, but he was definitely, if I'm correct, what, 6'6", 6'8".
Yeah.
Not doing the things that he was doing. So, and it's sad and tragic because you see it was like three young men that, that really got into it and one bought out a gun and the other one wasn't going to back down and unfortunately, one shot the guy out of fear, didn't want to get his butt whipped and ended up, killing the guy unintentionally. And then they turned the whole thing into a robbery, which it wasn't that. And that's even sad to say for people even put that in the,
right,
the meeting that everybody thinking. So that was truly sad to say. And, you know, terrible loss for the family and see it still hurt people to this day.
Oh, right. To this day, Jay, you know, you heard, who was that? Nick Anderson. We know about how great he was. You know, him talk about him in the glowing terms that other ball players that grew up in that era. It kind of shocked me because I've never been necessarily, very much involved in the basketball game. Yeah, I can talk about it intelligently, but Chicago, man, was a hotbed back in the day with turning out ball players.
I tell you, man, growing up in that area, you know, people always talk about the Rucker and New York City and Chicago. Man, all the ball players in that time, I mean, you had Kenny Battle, Anthony Hardaway, Hardaway was out there.
Tim Hardaway,
you had,
right.
You know, Marcus Liberty. You had so many guys coming up, and they all played right there on the south side of Chicago with all the summer league games. And it was just, what was so amazing to me about watching this documentary was, even though it was 1984, you still saw how bad black folks were treated because the kid laid on a gurney for 3 hours and bled to death.
Right. And perhaps could have been saved if somebody had, you know, immediate medical attention or intervention at that time. One would think that he'd still perhaps be with us today.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it was like B. Hoff said, it was so many cautionary tales. In that documentary, it talked about, you know, how three young men, you know, to some degree made bad decisions and caused, in this situation, just spurred out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the situation at the hospital. You know, it was just, but you really, it makes you sit back and think, man, you know, we have to get our kids to think, make good decisions. It's tough to get a kid to think and you know, dissolve situations before they get bad,
mm-hmm.
but that's just one of those where, you know, kids just have to understand, hey, sometimes it's okay just to walk away, bro.
Right, because you walk away with your life, man. You know?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if he could have those few seconds back, and Ben Wilson as well as the guy who shot him. And his buddy that was there, if they just could have thought this through. And that's when they talk about, we hear it all the time, that the youth is wasted on the young. And, you know, you get that wisdom with age because now, confronted with that same situation, let's say at 42, 43-40. Definitely the results are different. That's why you don't see, you know, we always talk about or hear that the black men between the ages of 18 and 30, how, you know, number one cause of death, what? Another black person. We always hear that, right? But as we mature, you don't see that. You know, 40, you might die from eating a pork chop, but you damn sure ain't getting shot on the corner.
Hey, classic example, and if you can move on to Florence Jordan Price's example. As a young man, I saw the movie Do the Right Thing, and at the very end, I was so angry that they killed a guy because he came in and a dude smashed his radio, and they killed him. I'm like, man, they killed a man for just a radio. But then when I got on and watched the movie, I was like, man, why did you just turn your door on radio?
Exactly.
You know, come at me and pay the business, scream and turn the radio up. That was a senseless death. Once I got older, I'm like, that was a dumb way to die.
Exactly. Because with that age and maturity, you begin to diffuse certain situations and remove them. Like, I don't want no problems with anybody. You know, most of us now, you know, can look at a situation and say, you know what? This is not going to end good. Why don't we go ahead and remove ourselves from this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I began to do that. I'd say maybe even more so my late 20s. I remember I was a prosecutor. My first gig out of law school. And we had Founders Day, you know, which is for my fraternity. We were going to have a big picnic at one of the, you know, picnics at the public park. And I picked one of my fraternity brothers up, and he said, oh, yeah, wait up for a second. Let me go to the car. I mean, go back in the house. So he went into the house, B and Jay, and he came back with a gun. And I told him, I said, look here, man, if it's that kind of party, I can't go. Why don't I drop you off? Because I don't need to go anywhere where you or anyone feels comfortable that they got to carry a gun. I can't do that, you know? And you think about our responsibilities. Now, you know, I got three little ones. I know, Jay, you got some. And B, you gonna have some. And you got to think about, hey, I have an obligation to come home to mama and them kids. And I'm not going to do anything that interferes with my ability to get home to be able to take care of them. So, you know, a lot could have been learned from that documentary. We definitely highly recommend it. And damn, folks, this show is almost over. We have less than 2 minutes, so let's talk about the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, and we're going to leave it with that. I'm a huge Georgia fan. Frankly, not very impressed with the defense, and Aaron Murray doesn't always get it done in big games. I'm going to have to side with Florida.
Well, like I always say, Georgia is Mark Rick's Georgia.
I know what you mean.
I got to go with Florida on this football game.
B-Hop, take us out. We got less than a minute, man. Give me your...
less than a minute, and I know it sounds crazy. Every year that Georgia ain't supposed to win, they always win it. But every year that Georgia, it feels like they got the most talent, but they always have like they have the most talent. They always lose it. So this year, Georgia is supposed to lose it. So I'm going with Georgia,
because
they're
going to
mess around and win,
because
they're supposed to get done in.
And with that, folks, we had to close it out, man. Continue to have a great Friday. To my main man, the one from the Dirty South, B-Hop, and the Midwest Swing, Jay Graves. Gentlemen, thank you so very much, and I look forward to getting at you next week. You all be good and be safe. Planet Gridiron, and we out. Holla. Go, 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 go.